And you're listening to Counterpoint, also on ABC Radio National. We're the program that broadcasts stories and points of view you're not so likely to hear anywhere else on the network.
Now, that covers a very wide range of possibilities. And, of course, only some of those possibilities are likely to be of interest to many listeners.
We're always keen to have your views on just what those subjects might be. So, if you do have any thoughts on what you'd like to hear on Counterpoint, please drop us a line. Maybe it's a topic or a person you think we should talk with. Maybe you'd even like to be on the program yourself.
All suggestions will be gratefully received and seriously considered. So get in touch with us via that website, abc.net.au/rn/counterpoint.
And this is not just about Paul and me doing less work this year. We would genuinely like to hear your views.
Oh, we do. Yes, yes.
Well, still to come today, Barry Brooks states the case for a domestic nuclear power industry and argues that nuclear is the best way to meet baseload power and the best way to reduce carbon emissions. He also tells us how the new generation of nuclear power plants can deliver energy for thousands of years without creating waste dilemmas.
And up next, why economist John Maynard Keynes is wrong. But first, to something we played on Counterpoint last year. It's the soundtrack to a mighty fine video clip called Boom and Bust that features a battle between two rappers. You know them well. They're John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek.
John Maynard Keynes.
F.A. Hayek.
Yeah, we're opposed.
We oppose each other philosophically.
In the same studio.
We've been going back and forth for a century. I want to steer markets. I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirits.
John Maynard Keynes wrote the book on modern macro. The man you need when the economy's off track. Depression, recession, now your question's in session. Have a seat and I'll school you in one simple lesson. Deficits could be the cure you've been looking for. Let the spending soar, now that you know the score. My general theory's made quite an impression. Say it loud and say it proud, we're all Keynesians now.
We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it.
I made my case, Freddie H. Listen up, can you hear it?
I'll begin in broad strokes, just like my friend Keynes. His theory conceals the mechanics to change. That simple equation, too much aggregation, ignores human action and motivation. Yet it continues as a justification for bailouts, payoffs by poles with machinations. You provide them with cover to sell us a free lunch. Then all that we're left with is debt and a bunch. If you're living high on that cheap credit hog, don't look for a cure from the hair of the dog. Real savings come first if you want to invest. The market coordinates time with interest. Your focus on spending is pushing on thread. In the long run, my friend, it's your theory that's dead. So sorry there, buddy, if that sounds like invective. Prepare to get schooled in my Austrian perspective. We've been going back and forth for a century.
I want to steer markets.
I want them set free. There's a boom and bust cycle and good reason to fear it. Play low interest rates.
It's the animal spirit.
A short sample from Boom and Bust, featuring those rappers from the hood, John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek.
A Boom and Bust was produced by the MacArthur Centre at George Mason University. The very edgy and savvy production is LLC and Quantcast. We'll post a link to the clip on the Counterpoint website.
Now, Keynesian economics is widely accepted. Indeed, it's become for many the conventional wisdom. But might spending by governments in tough times actually prolong the pain? Peter Smith, a former chief economist at State Bank of Victoria and economic advisor to the Australian Bankers Association, explains the theory and why he thinks Keynesian economics is just wrong.
Well, Keynes wrote his book, The General Theory, in 1936. He was a well-established economist and public figure at the time. He thought, though, that in writing that book he was going to revolutionise economics, which in fact he did. His theory in the book doesn't quite match what Keynesianism is now. When he wrote his book, he had a very pessimistic view about Western economies. We were in the middle of a big depression, and then that certainly coloured his writing. But his view, nonetheless, even though we were in a depression, was that very shortly Western industrial communities would have sufficient capital stock so that unemployment would become an endemic problem. In other words, there would be insufficient work for people to do. So he advocated the socialization of private investment. He didn't obviously believe in socialism, but he believed in the socialization of investment, the direction of investment by a wise central authority.
What exactly would most people now think of Keynesianism as?
Well, people now think of it in very simple terms, and in fact, it's very beguiling because ordinary people can understand it. You tend to think of production on one side and demand on the other. They both rise and fall together, so that if production and demand fall, then an obvious solution is to increase demand. And that basically defines Keynesianism, and that's what it's all about.
What about the role of government?
Well, the role of government, of course, is to supply one of the components of demand. So if you get consumption expenditure falling and you get private investment falling, then the idea is that government comes in and spends, and that increases overall demand and hence production. Unfortunately, it's a non sequitur. It doesn't work like that. The economy is much more complex than that.
I suppose economic history of the 20th century has been written in Keynesian terms to some extent, and so when economists and others look back, they seem to draw justification for current policies from then. I mean, maybe the first big stimulus package was the New Deal in America, would that be right? And that's often pointed to as an example of how a stimulus can work.
Yeah, it's very easy, too, to be critical of the New Deal because it was precisely in America where the Depression lasted so long. The Australian economy, most European economies had largely recovered in about 1936, whereas the US economy struggled on until the war years. So, in fact, it's a perfect example where, in fact, government spending didn't work. The problem is that a lot of other things happened, too. I mean, it wasn't just spending. Roosevelt interfered with the markets for farm products. He introduced minimum wage laws. So there's lots of ways in which he interfered with the recovery. But certainly you can never point to the New Deal as an example of how government spending got an economy out of recession, because, well, in fact, it was longer there.
You say one can't, but in fact it is often pointed to say just that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, I have to come back and say that if you're a Keynesian economist, you're one of two kinds. You're either a left-wing ideologue. It fits their worldview because they believe that the capitalist system has to be saved from itself. And Keynesianism is there offering the prospect of saving capitalism from itself. They will always be Keynesians. But there are, of course, lots of other Keynesians, most economists, who simply are taught that way in universities. And that's what they believe, so that whatever happens in an economy, what they do is they overlay their Keynesian prescription on top of it, and it always points in the same direction. Unfortunately, it's absolutely wrong. And the fact that maybe 95% of economists believe it doesn't make it any less wrong.
In 1971, President Richard Nixon said we're all Keynesians now, but as so often happens when an idea is praised that much, it sort of hit a rough patch after that, didn't it, in the 70s because of the oil crisis and things that happened?
It does. I mean, Keynesian economics is rather like socialism. It keeps popping back up, and it particularly pops back up when we get unemployment. It's less likely to pop up when we get high inflation. It really applies most forcefully when the economy goes into recession. Whether it's 1971, 1981, 1991, if you went through Federal Treasury, you would find most of them were Keynesian. Now, some of them are Keynesian because they're left-wing ideologues, but for the most part, they're just victims of Keynes. They actually believe it. I mean, they believe that you can control demand by government spending. They forget that demand is comprised of many, many, many different parts and components and different products, and you simply can't overlay a massive government demand over the economy and hope that it works.
To what extent was there competition or a sort of qualification of Keynesian economics in the 70s and 80s from other ideas such as monetarism?
There was. There were various other theories, monetarism and something called rational expectations. The problem with those theories were that they were partial. They didn't offer a key to the universe. They didn't offer governments the power to control economic events, and they were very complex. They were hard to understand. So they really remained in academia rather than coming into government policy and the way people thought about the economy. The strength of Keynesianism, however wrong it is, and it's badly wrong, is that it's very, very simple and very beguiling, and it offers governments the key to the universe. They can control economic cycles, and not only control economic cycles, but control them by doing what they like to do, which is to spend. Okay. This is a magnificent combination. You know, Mr. Swan claims here that it was his stimulus that saved Australia. Well, it was patently not. It was patently because of Chinese growth rather than his stimulus. It was because our banks were in such good positions. And it was because, of course, that Howard had run surpluses over the previous 10 years. All of those things were important. But, of course... It doesn't matter to politicians. They always claim that their policies have succeeded, and we can't blame them. Who we can blame is the economists behind them, because they should know better.
If, as you suggest, the recent stimulus packages have been based on what is no more than a delusion, if they have been mistakes of a large order, what sort of results do you think they're likely to have, especially in countries other than Australia?
Stimulus policies of this kind have enormously damaging effects. If I can just give you an example, when an economy goes into recession, usually the property market suffers a lot. What happens is that builders have difficulty in finding work. That means that building costs go down. That means that people who are interested and forward-looking, who want to perhaps build factories, renovate factories, build commercial buildings, have an opportunity. Interest rates are down, building costs are down, so that they go ahead based upon what they perceive to be real future demands in the economy. Now you introduce government spending willy-nilly on construction projects all over the place. And what else can they spend on? They have to spend it on these kinds of things. They spend billions of dollars in Australia on school halls everywhere, wanted or not. What this does is of course to keep building costs high. It's precisely the opposite of what you need. You want the economy to respond in recession to encourage future growth and production that's matching real future demands. But what you get is government coming in and producing this discord between what the economy actually needs and what it gets. Of course, you can't run counterfactual experiments, so you don't know this. But this is one of the first damaging results. It distorts price signals. It means that we have less robust and long-lived growth than we would have otherwise had. Secondly, of course, they borrow to fund this expenditure. Now, what they've spent it on is not productive, so it never earns an economic return, but the borrowings have to be repaid. So if interest rates go up in Australia, we can look to the government. It's spent too much.
Peter Smith is the former CEO of the Australian Payments Clearing Association and has been chief economist at State Bank of Victoria and economic advisor to the Australian Bankers Association.